Hi, my name is Kirk Kinder, and this is Saving Yourself from Wall Street, the podcast for people who want to avoid Wall Street's sales tactics, high cost, and conflicted advice so they can take control of their financial life. So let's get to it. In this episode of the Saving Yourself from Wall Street podcast, we talk to Buddy Rushing. Buddy has a very interesting story that I think you're really going to enjoy. He grew up in a household with meager means, which motivated him to work extremely hard so he could attend one of the nation's finest colleges, the United States Naval Academy at Annapolis. After graduating from the Naval Academy, Buddy was commissioned as an officer in the Marine Corps, where he still serves today as a major. What's really interesting about Buddy's story is he broke the bonds of his meager upbringing to build real wealth. Now, how did he do this? He did it with real estate. Knowing nothing about money, and especially real estate, Buddy made some early blunders but kept with it, and now he not only owns a hefty real estate portfolio for his family, but his mission is to teach and help other military members do exactly what he's done. In today's podcast, Buddy will give you an overview of how he started his journey and how you can do it as well with real estate. Welcome to the show, Buddy.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Excited to have you. So, I get tons of questions on real estate investing from people all the time. How do you get started? What should you look for? So I thought you'd be an excellent person to talk to just because, you know, you kind of developed really a huge following with your company, White Feather. But, you know, I kind of wanted to start off with, so how did an Annapolis grad and a Marine officer end up becoming a specialist in real estate investing?
It's a great question. I didn't know anything about real estate when I was at the Academy. I majored in aerospace engineering, which of course has nothing to do with any of that. I remember meeting somebody when I was at the Academy, one of my instructors, who was about ready to retire after 20 years. And he said, I said, so what are your plans after you retire? And he said, well, I'm going to sell all my properties and I'm going to buy a $1 million house in Coronado. And this was back in, 02. So about 17 years ago, goodness gracious. Anyway, yeah. So I was like, well, okay, how, you got to tell me how a military officer can afford a $1 million house, because that's insane, right? And he said, well, I just, I used my VA loan and I bought a house every duty station I went to. And then when I left, I would, I'd rent it out and, maybe refinance out of it and then use the VA loan to buy at the next duty station and put zero down. And I did that, four or five times. And, they've all built up a bunch of equity. And now I'm selling them all and I'm pouring all that money into this house in Coronado. And I thought that was the craziest thing I'd ever heard. And what stuck with me was that a normal person like me could use, a long-term strategy like that. And to me, $1 million was like unfathomable. I mean, you got to understand,
oh, yeah.
I grew up on food stamps and WIC in East Tennessee, right? Like we were five of us kids and from a poor family. So the idea of $1 million is like the idea of going to the moon, right?
Okay.
It's just completely unrelatable. And yet here was a person who was wearing the same uniform as me who was able to do that. And that kind of stuck with me. So I remember thinking, okay, all right, so then all I have to do is buy properties and, maybe even fix them up and then sell them and I'll be rich. And that's kind of what I had in my head. That was the extent of the education I had. And so then I went on my first deployment and I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad when I was on deployment. And, I will tell you that book, Robert Kiyosaki's book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, you probably heard of it. It's the best-selling personal finance book of all time, right? I thought it was interesting because the book itself is like horribly written, right? It's one of the worst written books ever, but the nuggets inside it are life changing. I remember reading them and thinking my life will forever be changed because I know this stuff now. And nevertheless, though, that was the extent of my education. And then I came back from my first deployment, and this was 07. And, I bought a property in 29 Palms. And it was a really piece of crap property that was needed a lot of work. And I remember thinking, okay, I'm going to take what I've learned, which is buy a property, renovate it, sell it, make lots of money. And then I'm going to become a millionaire. And so I bought it and I poured every dollar that I had into renovating the property, and I did it all myself, right? So over 18 months, I was renovating the property. I made it brand new, sparkling new. The only problem was I didn't know anything about a market. I didn't even know what a market was. And I bought it in June of 07. And so over 18 months, right? So it's the end of 2008 whenever I finally finished the renovation. I get it appraised, and it appraises fully renovated for half of the value that I bought it at a year and a half earlier. Because the market had completely imploded in 29 Palms during that time. It was the greatest drop in the market in the history of that town. And so I was exactly at the wrong place at the wrong time. And, you know, so that was my first experience in real estate. And I honestly couldn't tell you, Kirk, why I didn't just push back from the table and say real estate sucks, because I had every right to do that.
Sure.
But for whatever reason, I looked around the town and I said, wait a minute. Every property in this town is half off, and the rents are steadily increasing because we're in Iraq and Afghanistan. They're increasing BAH. They're increasing the size of the troops. So, you know, we plussed up to 202,000 in the Marine Corps at that time, and rents were going through the roof because they were correlated to BAH. And so I was like, well, maybe I'll just buy properties and rent them out then. And so I bought the next property for $69,000, fully, like, brand new. It was less than a year old. Bought it for $69,000, three-bedroom, two-bath, 1,200 square foot. My mortgage PITI was $385 a month, and I rented it out for $950. And so it was like, wow, with, you know, this is pretty cool. We can do some pretty good stuff here. And then, long story short, is over the next 10 years, I went through a bunch of courses, got very, very educated in all different types of real estate. Did joint ventures, trust deed lending, wholesaling, you know, bought in a trust, bought with my IRA, you know, did equity value adds and, you know, partnerships and just a whole bunch of different types of investing over the next 10 years or so. And, you know, and you know, I never really looked back after that.
Wow. Okay. So the first two places you bought, did you use like a VA loan for those, or how did you go about that?
No. This is the crazy part. So the first one I bought was during the 07 craziness, right? So, like, literally people were signing up mortgages under their pet's name and getting away with it, right? Yeah. So, and that's the truth, right? So, yeah. I did something called the Veterans Choice, which was this, like, made up whatever, right? The mortgage broker I was working with was a total fraud. And so anyway, it was like a 6.5% interest loan, zero down, but it wasn't a VA loan. It was just a, hey, let's get loans at any cost, because that's the kind of craziness that was going on. So I eventually refinanced out of that into a stable 30-year, you know, loan. And I actually still own that property. Remember me telling you it was like worth half of what I paid for it?
Yeah.
Well, it's almost back to even now. I've owned it for 10 years. I rented it out and owned it for 10 years. And that actually speaks to the value of long-term rental real estate and how it can be pretty market independent, because I didn't have a choice. I had to hold on to that property because I couldn't sell it or I'd just take a bath. And, you know, and it has cash flowed, and, you know, and now it's pretty much back to even, right? So still not a good investment, but the number one investment that you make in long-term rental real estate is time. And if you have time on your side, pretty much any house can be a winner. That was one of the big things I learned. But no, I didn't use my VA loan until 6 months ago, as crazy as that sounds.
Wow. Okay.
I bought with private financing. I bought with hard money. I bought with any types of financing you could get. I purchased cash. I did all of that stuff. But I didn't find the perfect property to use my VA loan on until about 6 months ago in the house that I'm sitting out in front of right now. And the only reason I did is because I was able to use my VA loan to buy a house here in Carlsbad that had a guest suite. And I'm going to Airbnb the guest suite, and that's going to offset so much of my mortgage that it's actually going to be cheaper than renting.
Wow. Okay. Great. That's awesome. And that's a whole nother market that you could start to look at real estate. I know there's a lot of people renting places and then they turn around and do Airbnb and do some arbitrage and make some money that way. So
that's exactly right. I've got actually a property that I bought near Memphis where the guy that sold it to me then leased it back from me. So he sold me a turnkey rental property and then leased it back from me and is doing an Airbnb. So he's subleasing it with short-term rentals, and he makes the net. And for me, you know, what do I care, right?
Sure.
I'm the best tenant in the entire world because he never, there's never any maintenance. There's never any vacancy. He always pays on time. And, you know, I mean, it's like the perfect tenant. And, you know, I want him to make money on his short-term rental. So, you know, and it works for him too, because if he does his job right, he makes free money.
Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you know, you kind of mentioned in your answer that you kind of went to some schools and things along those lines to really start to understand all the different ways to do real estate. So for most people, you know, somebody who has an interest to learn about it, but they're not really sure where to start, like, where would you direct them? What would you tell them that you would recommend them doing?
Well, so I can tell you what I wouldn't recommend them doing, which is what I did first. I'll be honest with you. I feel like every major decision I've made in my life, I've always screwed it up first, and then I start making good decisions, with one exception of my marriage. I'm still in my first marriage. That's going pretty well. But every other decision, my first car that I bought, I had a 16.9% interest on, right? My first house that I bought was the travesty I just talked to you about. You know, the first credit card I had was a 20% interest. And it just seems like my first decision always sucks. But my first decision to educate myself was to sign up for one of those $40,000 Rich Dad education courses, because I'd read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and I loved the teachings of Robert Kiyosaki. You know, and they sell you really hard at those guru scenarios the seminars. And I was like, this is amazing. So literally right before I was ready to deploy, I put like 40 grand on a series of credit cards, because that's what they tell you to do, right? Put it on credit cards. Don't worry, you'll be able to flip houses. You'll be able to do all this. And I will say this. The courses aren't scams, right? They're legitimate educational material. But what they don't tell you is how freaking hard it is to actually do deals. And they don't actually provide you support in doing any deals. Like, they're not like, here's a deal, buy this deal, right? And they're not, like, they don't actually give you real mentorship. They give you these pre-baked educational programs. So they don't tell you how hard it is to actually do deals. And two, they don't tell you that you can get all of that stuff elsewhere, right? So my first decision was to pay 40 grand for a Rich Dad education course. It's a long story, but basically, long story short, I ended up getting my money back by threatening to sue them and do all this stuff. And not sue them, but basically slander their name to all military people if they didn't give me my money back, because they weren't delivering on their promise, basically, is what it came down to. They made all these promises that they then just completely didn't deliver on. And so anyway, don't do that. That's my first advice. You don't need to pay 40 grand for an educational course. I'm not saying don't pay for a focused course, because there are really, really good ones out there. And I have paid multiple times for various educational courses that have been fantastic, right? So I'm not saying that, but start with Bigger Pockets. Honestly, start with biggerpockets.com. It's a free website that has tons of podcasts and articles and book recommendations and everything. And it's free. I mean, you can pay for a subscription if you want to get some of the advanced stuff, but you don't need to. BiggerPockets.com is a fantastic resource, and it's free. And I'm not even affiliated with them at all. I just use them, right?
Okay. And I'll put that in the show notes.
Yeah, put it in the show notes, because, you know, I mean, I've found over the last decade, I've gotten so much great education from Bigger Pockets. Now it's not a focused course, which, you know, I mean, there's a lot of benefit to being a part. Now, I did a course called New Wealth, which was basically part of a focused group that, you know, that actually did somewhat help you do deals. And, you know, I met a guy, Mark Kohler, there, who's an absolute genius from a tax and legal perspective. And I was able to build some key elements of my team doing that. But honestly, I never found a single military-focused course that drove you to take action and helped you actually do deals, ever. I never found that anywhere, which is why I eventually created it with the SABM, right? So that's what I would say. Start with the free biggerpockets.com, and then, you know, you'll be able to read a bunch of books. Listen to the Real Estate Guys podcast is a really good one. Listen to a bunch of podcasts, read some books, read articles on Bigger Pockets. educate yourself on what's out there. And then if you want to take a focused course or join a mastermind group, by all means, go to your local real estate investors association, REIAs. Look up your local REIAs and start attending those. That's what I would recommend to people. Don't go out and spend tons of money on a course.
Now, did you ever do much with the REIAs at all? Just getting to network with people there, or?
Yeah, the REIAs were fantastic from a networking perspective, as well as for an education and staying plugged into your local real estate market. I mean, you know, here in Southern California, it's a shark pit here, right? Some of the most expensive real estate in the world, you know, is here and in and around here. And, you know, so you got a ton of investors. And so, you know, there's really a lot to learn. So yes, I would absolutely say plug into your local REIT.
Okay. Okay. And then, you know, it sounds like you've done so many different types of real estate. What's kind of the easiest way for somebody to get started? Should they just focus on maybe finding one property and, like you said, hold it for the long term, make sure the numbers work, or, you know, wholesaling, bird dogging? What's kind of the way to get started, the easiest way, lowest risk for people?
You know, it's a good question. It depends on what your goals are. If you are a person who wants to do real estate full time and you just don't have any money, or you don't have a high threshold for risk or whatever, then wholesaling is the way to go, right? I started, my first three deals were wholesale, right? Which is essentially where you get a deal locked up in a contract and then you sell the contract to somebody. And, you know, I will not be one of those people who touts that wholesaling is actually, you don't need any money to do it, because let's face it, you got to find the deal. How do you find the deal if you don't have any money? The people are like, oh, we'll just drive around and knock on doors. Well, that costs gas, brother. So it does take a little bit of money, right? And my first three wholesales I got through a letter campaign, right? So I printed off all these letters, you know, to military absentee owners, right? So that had owned the property longer than 15 years. And I said, hey, you know, I'm a Marine, you know, I'm moving, or I'm in 29 Palms. I'd love your house. I'd love to, you know if you want to sell it, that kind of thing. And then I got calls back and I went from there. But it did cost money. It cost several hundred dollars to do the campaign. So don't think that it doesn't cost any money, but it's way less expensive to start with wholesaling. If you're the kind of person who has a job, now this is the number one people that I deal with, is the kind of people that are just like me, where you've got a full-time job, you know that you can build wealth through real estate. You've heard it. You know that real estate is a fantastic way to build wealth, but you really don't know what you're doing. You don't really have a network, and you don't have a high tolerance for risk. So the question is, how do you get started? And what I would recommend is do turnkey rental properties. Turnkey rental properties, long and think long-term, right? This isn't a get-rich-quick. It's not a get-rich-overnight kind of thing. But if you buy, and what I mean by turnkey is a property that has been renovated, that has a tenant inside it, and that is already cash flowing and is under management, right? So you shouldn't be managing your own properties. You shouldn't be renovating your own properties. You shouldn't be doing all that stuff if you have a full-time job, because that's not passively building generational wealth. That's creating another job for yourself. And you can do it, right? I did it. And I managed my own properties and I did the renovations myself. And I know what I'm talking about whenever I say, don't do that stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Because again, remember my mantra is I always screw up first and then I learn. And so, you know, I would recommend to people, if you have a full-time job and you're just looking to start building wealth, then start with turnkey rentals. Because let's just say you take $30K and you put 20% down on a $130,000 property, right? So with closing costs and everything, you're out 30 grand. That property should be, for $130,000, it should be renting for about 1,100 or more, right? And in a decent area. And so if you do that after all your expenses, which is principal, interest, tax, insurance, property management, an allowance for maintenance, an allowance for vacancy, after a PITI, property management, maintenance, and vacancy, you should be cash flowing $200 to $300 a month, right? So think about what that is, though. If it's $300 a month and you're making 10, 11, 12% cash on cash on the money you put out, plus the renter is paying down your mortgage, plus the property is appreciating, plus you're getting tax benefits, and rent goes up over time. So all of those things bundled together into a combinatory return. So after a while, you're not you don't get linear returns anymore. You get exponential returns, because if a property appreciates at 3 to 5%, every single year it's appreciating on the appreciated value. So it becomes an exponential equation. That's why if you focus on long-term rental real estate and you just buy one or two properties a year, 10 years from now, you're a millionaire. 12 mm-hmm. years from now, you're a multimillionaire, right? And then it just goes on. And by the way, when you finally do die, your estate is worth more than it was when you were 50 or 60, because real estate continues to appreciate over time. Even with the depressions and the recessions, the average appreciation rate across the United States is around 3 to 5%. Even with the Great Depression and the Great Recession and all the many corrections in between.
Yeah.
So that's it. And time. Time is the number. When people ask me, when is the best time to invest? The market's at a high right now, right? Should I hold off for 5 or 6 years and then invest? I say, when it comes to flipping, maybe. When it comes to long-term rental real estate, absolutely not. The very best time to buy long-term rental real estate was yesterday.
So the key for you when you're looking at it is just make sure that whatever deal you're doing, the numbers work from the start. It's cash flowing, positive cash flow.
100%. The numbers. Yep. The numbers are everything. Everybody says location, location, location. Well, that's what real estate agents say, at least. But investors, it's more about the deal than it is the location.
Okay.
Because you could give me a property in a terrible neighborhood, but if I get it for a few bucks, what difference does it make, right? So it's about the deal, and it's about the numbers and the underlying assumptions. And by the underlying assumptions, I mean the assumptions for how vacant it's going to be, for how much maintenance is going to cost, for what the taxes are going to be, and so on, right? Those are assumptions. And so if those assumptions aren't terribly volatile, if they're fairly stable, if it's a 3% or a 5% vacancy, and I know I can count on that, then I can run my numbers. And as long as my numbers work, then it's good to go. And so I've got, you know, I teach this in my course, but like I've got, you know, multiple sort of calculators and spreadsheets that we use to like, you know, to bake in the assumptions and to make conservative estimates so that you can just confidently fire off offers and take down deals. And yeah, I mean, we're getting pretty good at it. We've closed on 110 properties in the last 2 years, and we've got another 19 in escrow right now.
Wow.
So, you know, and it's just math, man. It's just math and you know, and working hard, really.
And
what it comes down to.
Those deals, are you basically finding it for like, say, an individual like me to have a property, or are you grouping the money together so that I might be with 6 or 7 other investors into a property?
So all options are available. So
okay.
Most of the 110 properties I was talking about are all individually owned. So basically, I have operations, turnkey operations in 6 different cities. And then we're opening up new cities, you know, this year. So a turnkey operation is an operation where they will market, the guys on the ground there will market for a property. They'll get it under contract. They'll buy it cash, renovate it, place a tenant, put it under management. And then they basically put it on my master tracker. And when it appears on my master tracker, then I know it's available for a white feather investor. So I run the numbers, I do the quality control and everything. And then I will pick somebody out of the group who has, you know, we've identified as like next in line to get one of these deals. And then I'll give them a call and we'll talk through the deal. Right. And then they basically say, yep, I want that deal. I think it's great. I'm ready to take it down. And then we will, you know, basically just match them up with it. Right. So it's the purpose of what our deal flow does is it helps get people in the game. Remember me saying that like the education course I took, the biggest problem was they didn't help you do deals.
Mm-hmm.
So that doing deals is the number one thing that moves the needle in your life. Education's good, but action has to be paired with it. Otherwise, nothing ever changes. You just go into analysis paralysis and you educate yourself for years and nothing ever changes. You got to take action as well. So what we do is we help people take action on deals that we've already vetted so we know that they're good, right? And then we encourage them to go find deals themselves too, right? It's not just about me feeding people, right? It's also about, you know, teaching people how to become investors. And then the other end of the spectrum is, yes, we do have larger syndications. So we've got a we've got a syndication right now where we're, it's basically a $45 million project where we're building from scratch a 320-unit luxury apartment complex outside of Austin in an opportunity zone, which is a fantastic tax break. And so we're raising $13 million more dollars. We've already raised two, raising $13 million in 50 to 100K increments. And so like an individual investor, like me personally, I'm putting 100K of my own money into it. And, you know, and a bunch of other of my investors are. And so, you know, that's a way to, you know, get in the game with these bigger deals where the cash flow numbers are eye-popping. You basically offset most of the risk. You offset all of the liability from a legal perspective, right? Because you're just an investor, right? So you're not personally mm-hmm. liable for anything. And you get to ride the wave of appreciation. You get to ride the cash flow wave, get the tax benefits, everything. And it's pretty passive, right? So you're not actually managing the property or doing any of that. You're just putting your money to work for you. And it's not quite like creating a fund where like you just put your money into an account and then I go spend it for you. It's really more we find a deal and then we all come together in a big gang and take it down.
Okay. And can you take just a couple seconds to talk about, you mentioned opportunity zone. So that's kind of a new tax feature for some real estate areas. Could you just take a second to kind of enlighten people on that?
Yeah. It's the most, go Google it, like as soon as you finish this podcast, it is the most ridiculous opportunity. I've never seen anything like it ever. And I've never heard of anything like it, although I'm sure, you know, I'm only 37, so I'm sure that this is kind of thing has happened in the past. But long story short, the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act passed by Trump, it did a lot of different things. One of the things that it did was it allowed all 50 states to identify opportunity zones for areas that they wanted revitalized or grown, right? So either areas that had kind of experienced economic hardships or areas that weren't developed yet, right? And that they wanted to develop, which is really the exciting part, is so if something's designated as an opportunity zone, any new construction or significant renovation in that falls within the guidelines and is able to capitalize on the tax benefits. So here's the tax benefits. There's three major ones. One is that if you buy or build or renovate an opportunity in an opportunity zone and you hold on to it for a minimum of 10 years, so if you sell it at 10 years and a day, 100% of the capital gains is untaxed. Literally, so this particular property, we're building it brand new, right? And we're going to spend about $43 million building it. We're going to hold on to it for 10 years and we're going to sell it. And if we expect at a 5 cap, it'll sell for about $95 million. So that's about $50 million of capital gains in 10 years. Normally, the 50, goodness gracious, sorry, people are calling me. Normally, those capital gains would get taxed at anywhere between 15 and 20% for long-term capital gains rate. So 20% of 50 million is 10 million bucks, right? That would normally you'd have to spend $10 million in taxes. We get to keep that $10 million. So that's $1 million a year, essentially, that is not taxed, that is not paid in tax just for holding onto it for 10 years. And the government is saying the reason they're allowing you to do that is because it's good for the area, right? It's good for allowing people a place to live. It's good for the economics of the area. So that's one of the biggest ones, is if you hold onto it for 10 years, you don't have to pay capital gains tax. The second part is if you invest in that property with money that is subject to capital gains. So say, for instance, I sell a property here in California for $500,000 and I have $100,000 that of cash to invest. And let's just say I'm on the hook for paying $100,000 in capital gains tax. If I invest that $100,000 into this opportunity zone, number one, I don't have to pay that tax for 7 years, right? So I literally just 7 years. I don't have to pay that tax. Whenever I do pay the capital gains tax, after 7 years, I only pay 85% of what I would have paid. So I get a 15% discount. It just goes away, right? So number one, you get 7 more years without having to pay that tax, which is cool. And two, you get a 15% discount just for using that money. And then the third part, and this is freaking fantastic. I love this. So I don't know if you know what bonus depreciation is.
Yep.
And again, if anybody has any of these questions or whatever, you know, I'm happy to, you can Google all this stuff, right? But essentially, when you take a property And normally you depreciate it, a straight line depreciation is 27 and a half years, right? But you can do accelerated depreciation on certain parts of the house, right? So you can do a cost segregation analysis and you can identify roughly a third of the property value, the actual building value in accelerated depreciation. So if it's $1 million property, you know, 80% of that is the property and 20% is the land. So 800,000 of it you can depreciate. About a third of that, so about 240,000 can be accelerated. What the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act said is that accelerated depreciation can now all be taken in year one as bonus depreciation.
Wow.
Okay? So I know it just said a lot of words there, and a lot of people get turned off by taxes, and it's because they don't understand that understanding taxes can turn a good deal into a freaking life-changing, fantastic deal.
Mm-hmm.
So understand this. We do bonus depreciation, right? Now, what's the bad side of bonus depreciation? You have to recapture it, right? Yeah, you take all of this depreciation in year one and it crushes your tax and you pay zero taxes, or maybe you get a bunch of money back, right? And that's great, but when you sell the property, you have to recapture it, i.e. pay more taxes, right? Except in an opportunity zone. In an opportunity zone, so this $45 million property, we're bonus depreciating $10 million in the first year. And as long as we hold on to it for 10 years and a day, we don't have to recapture. We don't have to recapture. Dude, honestly, so let me just
so put you all have that to recapture, together. You don't again. Recapture any of the depreciation or just the accelerated? So
you
does
don't
it
have
take
to
it
recapture
like-
any. So understand, if you hold on to it for 10 years, all capital gains is dissolved.
Yeah.
Including the capital gains that result from you depreciating.
Wow.
You hear what I'm saying now? Insane. So a $100,000 investor in this property can write off $66,000 in year one, assuming they're a real estate professional, right? Assuming you qualify as a real estate professional, you can write off $66,000. If you're in a 35% tax bracket, that's like $22,000 or $23,000 of real money that you get back or don't have to pay in taxes in year one, and guess what? You don't have to recapture it when you sell.
Wow. Yeah, that's huge.
It's insane.
And that's why I was asking you to explain a little bit, because it's really, it's new. Not many people know about it, but it's an enormous opportunity. And I think the only time people have heard about it is Amazon. When they were looking to move into New York, they were looking specifically in an area that was designated as an opportunity zone.
Because they're not dumb.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And here's the thing that a lot of people don't know as well is it's going away. In December 31st of this year, it will no longer be available in its current form. It'll be a step down version and then it'll go away completely in like 2021, I believe.
Wow.
So this is no kidding, a once in a lifetime opportunity, and you better believe I'm taking advantage of it.
Now, have you been looking to do any like 1031s into these yourself, or how are you approaching it?
So as far as 1031s go, I have done 1031s in the past, and it's a great question. I'm actually doing so. Understand something, you do. Investing in an opportunity zone essentially trumps the need to do a 1031.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
So essentially you are kind of doing a 1031, but you don't need to do it. You don't need to actually have a 1031 exchange coordinator, hold your money, and then blah, blah, blah. All you do is reinvest the money yourself, and then it offsets for 7 years, and then you do a 15% discount. So in a lot of ways, it is a 1031. It's just a 15% discount when you actually have to pay the tax back.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of people, you know, there's a lot of other, enormous tax benefits with real estate. You know, you've talked appreciation, but even if, you know, you want to leave an inheritance to kids, you hold it till you die and then they get a step up in basis and they avoid the depreciation recapture and capital gains. And yeah, so there's enormous tax benefits to the real estate.
People don't understand. People get burned, bored by taxes. And I always say that if you don't think that tax strategy is sexy, you don't know enough about it.
Yeah.
Because you're honestly, man, it is the overwhelmingly number one expense in our lives. Overwhelmingly, no matter who you are, tax is the number one expense in your life. And the wealthiest 1% of Americans pay like a fraction of the per capita tax as we do, based off of the dollars that they make, even though they pay more tax than everybody else, right? Mm-hmm. And they're taxed like crazy. Nevertheless, because of their tax strategies, they keep a huge portion of their money, and they should, right? Because
sure.
Let's face it, tax laws are written for the good of the community, right? When I buy a rental property and I'm able to depreciate it and write off a bunch of my taxes for improving the property, what am I really doing? I'm providing a clean, safe, livable house for somebody to live in a safe neighborhood. That's good for the community. That's why I get the tax break. So tax breaks are meant to to basically push you to do things that the government wants you to do anyway that's good for the community. That's why you get such fantastic tax breaks whenever you invest in charity. Because by and large, charities are good for people, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
People just, they don't seem to understand. Like, they're scared of taxes or they think they're evil or whatever. And yeah, man, if you just learn. Just learn a good, solid strategy, and that's why one of the biggest parts of the accelerator that I teach is taxes. And people, I tell people like this, and you know, we actually were calculating up. You know, we had one guy that saved over $100,000 in actual taxes this year, or he will when he files his 2019 taxes, because of strategies that we helped him implement.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's huge. It's huge. So kind of just want to kind of finish up. So again, you know, the new investor, somebody looking to do it, what are the biggest pitfalls that they're going to make or that you see people make with real estate? Like, what big things would you say you've got to stay away from doing this?
I would stay away from trying to do everything yourself. That's one of the problems that people mostly run into is they'll say, you know what, I need to be able to see and feel and touch my investment. And so I'm going to buy a house that's close to where I live, renovate it myself. And I mean, if you're doing that for the experience, great. Yeah, no problem. Just fine. Do it for the experience. But if you're doing it because you don't know any better and you're just like, oh, this is the only way I know to do this, you know, you need to start with education. You really do. You need to start with education and networking. And I would say don't try to go out and do it on your own because you just don't know what you don't know. And the worst mistakes I ever made were because they could have been so easily avoided if I had literally anybody with a modicum of experience there with me, right?
Okay.
I would say, yeah, don't try to go it alone. And like I said, don't steer clear of, you know, there's definitely some overhyped, overpriced programs that are out there. There's no reason to ever spend 30 or 40 grand on a program ever. So,
okay.
I would get plugged. I mean, honestly, what don't do is kind of the opposite of what I said to do, right? So educate yourself, go to Bigger Pockets, get yourself a network, build yourself a team, and you will avoid all of the things that people screw up on.
Sure. Okay. All right. So maybe go check out
Here's one thing I will say. People, whenever they get excited about starting a business, they get focused on the wrong things, right? They don't focus on IPAs, right? Income producing activities. You need to make a list of the things that you can do that produce income and focus on those. Otherwise, human nature, almost everyone, they will spend weeks and weeks designing a logo, buying business cards off Vistaprint, you know, creating a banner or, you know, finding a business name, creating an LLC, you know, they'll do all of this stuff that they think is required to start a business. You don't need any of that. You don't need a website. You don't need any of that stuff. Go do deals, do income producing activities, start making some money. Then you can worry about the business name and the website and the logo and all of that different stuff. The thing is, people love doing that because it's fun. It's exciting. And, you know, and it's not scary, right? And so, but what the reason that it should be scary is because you're spending valuable time and money on things that aren't producing income. So don't focus on non-IPAs.
Okay. That's good advice. Great advice. For any business, not just real estate, but any business.
Absolutely.
So, well, great. So how could, you know, people, if they want to get more information about you, do you have, you know, websites, you know, social media, any place that they could go to learn a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, we're a military focused group. So I will say that, and it's not that, you know, I don't love everybody equally. I do. It's just there is a big, big need in the military community for, financial freedom, because, you know, so many people serve honorably and give their whole heart and their whole bodies to service. And then when they get out, there's this massive culture shock, and, you know, there's a lot of, I mean, you know, this, it's the veterans are homeless at a rate of 6 times the average person, right?
Yeah.
There's
yep.
so much pain and suffering in the military community. And a big reason, is because when they get out, their skills aren't applicable. And so they have a hard time finding jobs and everything like that. And it's not up to the government to change it. It's up to us, because if we make some moves while we're on active duty or when we're just fresh out, we can start building financial freedom, even with, you know, especially through real estate. And that gives us a sense of purpose. It gives us a sense of community. It helps us to provide for our families, and it keeps us away from the drugs and alcohol and suicide. Right. So that is our mission at White Feather. And so we are a military focused group. So I would say that is, you know, if people could please kind of respect that, think the USAA model, right? There's plenty of great banks out there. USAA just happens to focus on military. So Bigger Pockets isn't military focused. So I would say start there for sure.
Okay.
But
okay.
if you are military, or if your family is military, if you have a close affiliation, then yeah, feel free, reach out to me on Facebook, type in Buddy Rushing. I'll probably pop up. You could, you know, we do have a website, whitefeatherinvestments.com, but it is, we are in the process of, relaunching it, cause we put a whole bunch of functionality into it. And so that should be up in about a week or so. I don't know when you're posting this, but they can go to whitefeatherinvestments.com or just look me up on Facebook. I'm out there. We don't have a huge presence, cause like I said, we're a fairly closed community. Cause we're trying to really focus our efforts on, you know, the military people that, mm-hmm. that are our purpose. So that's kind of, we don't actually do a lot of marketing or advertising or anything like that.
Okay. Okay. Sure. Well, I want to thank you again for taking some time out to educate us. I think anybody that listens to this is going to walk away with just a ton of good information. So I appreciate your time.
Absolutely. My pleasure. And I appreciate you, inviting me on here and taking the time on a Friday.
Absolutely. All right, buddy. We'll take care.
All right. Have a good one.
Well, that's it for this episode of the Saving Yourself from Wall Street podcast. I appreciate you stopping in. As always, you can find our podcast along with other articles and videos at savingyourselffromwallstreet.com. And now, the lawyers say hi.
Saving Yourself from Wall Street is hosted by Kirk Kinder. Kirk Kinder is the owner of Picket Fence Financial, a fee-only financial planning firm. Picket Fence Financial is regulated by the states of Maryland and Florida in accordance and in compliance with securities laws and regulations. Picket Fence Financial does not render or offer to render personalized financial or tax advice through the Saving Yourself from Wall Street podcast. The information provided is for informational purposes only and does not constitute financial, tax, investment, or legal advice.